Chapter 32. There was no immediate bloodshed. The threats were not forgotten, but as time passed, they became less ominous. I never stopped carrying a gun. It was always within reach, but I lost interest in it. I found it hard to believe that the Pagets would risk the severe backlash that would come if they knocked off the editor of the local paper. Even if the town was not entirely enamored of me, as opposed to someone as beloved as Mr. Caudle, the uproar would create more pressure than the Pagets were willing to risk. They kept to themselves like never before. After the defeat of Mackey Don Coley in 1971, they once again proved quite adept at changing tactics. Danny had given them enough unwanted attention. They were determined to avoid any more. They retrenched even deeper into Paget Island. They increased security in the wasted belief that the next sheriff, T.R. Meredith, or his successor, Trice McNatt, might come after them. They grew their crops and smuggled them off the island in planes, boats, pickups, and flatbed trucks ostensibly loaded with timber. With typical Paget shrewdness and sensing that the marijuana business might become too risky, they began pumping money into legitimate enterprises. They bought a highway contracting company and quickly turned it into a reliable bidder for government projects. They bought an asphalt plant, a ready-mix concrete plant, and gravel pits around the northern part of the state. Highway construction was a notably corrupt business in Mississippi, and the Pagets knew how to play the game. I watched these activities as closely as possible. This was before the Freedom of Information Act and open meetings laws. I knew the names of some of the companies the Pagets had bought, but it was virtually impossible to keep up with them. There was nothing I could print, no story, because on the surface it was all legitimate. I waited, but for what I wasn't certain. Danny Paget would return one day, and when he did, he might simply disappear into the island and never be seen again. Or he might do otherwise. Few people in Clanton did not attend church. Those who did seemed to know exactly which ones did not, and there was a common invitation to come worship with us. The farewell, "see you on Sunday," was almost as common as "y'all come see us." I got hammered with these invitations during my first years in town. Once it was known that the owner and editor of the Times did not go to church, I became the most famous derelict in town. I decided to do something about it. Each week, Margaret put together our religion page, which included a rather extensive menu of churches arranged by denominations. There were also a few ads by the more affluent congregations, and notices for revivals, reunions, potluck suppers, and countless other activities. Working from this page and from the phone book, I made a list of all the churches in Ford County. The total was 88, but it was a moving target since congregations were always splitting, folding here and popping up over there. My goal was to visit each one of them, something I was sure had never been done, and a feat that would put me in a class by myself among churchgoers. The denominations were varied and baffling. How could Protestants, all of whom claimed to follow the same basic tenets, get themselves so divided? They agreed basically that, 1, Jesus was the only Son of God, 2, he was born of a virgin, 3, lived a perfect life, 4, was persecuted by the Jews, arrested and crucified by the Romans, 5, that he arose on the third day and later ascended into heaven, 6, and some believed, though there were many variations, that one must follow Jesus in baptism and faith to make it to heaven.